Welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Rachel K., a compulsive overeater from Indiana.
Thank you, Jessica, and you're timing me. I just started my own timer too. Okay, cool. Hi, I am Rachel K., recovered compulsive overeater, and yeah, and I'm glad you said what you did, Jessica, about this is I do not represent OA as a whole. I heard something on a AA tape, and it was actually a cassette tape, which I'll tell you about how long I've been in program, but that said if you agree with everything that you hear at meetings and you like everybody that you meet, then you're not going to enough meetings. So hopefully you'll hear something helpful. If you don't, I encourage you to talk to somebody after the meeting, go to another meeting. Yeah, I have to tell you this has been a weird past 24 hours for me. Going through some stuff with my boyfriend, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm speaking on a meeting tonight. And I was realizing, and I was just like, how am I going to speak on a meeting tonight? And I was realizing, like, service is a gift. Thank God I'm speaking on a meeting tonight. Not because I think what I have to say is so great, but because, as is explained in the Big Book, we keep this by giving it away. And if I were not, first of all, if I weren't absent recovered, I wouldn't be in a relationship. The only relationship I had was with food, and it was not a very good one, before getting recovered and abstinent. And second of all, if I were turning to the food through this, God, what a mess. What a mess. So it is a blessing to be on here and to talk about the Big Book and talk about my recovery. So okay, I'll back up a little bit. I'm going to try to structure this like what it was like, what happened and what it's like now. So just to give you some stats, I came into my first meeting long time ago in 1985. I was 15 years old. Don't get out your calculators. That means I'll be 56 next month. I forget. I honestly, let's just say this. I'm at the age where thank God I was born in a year that ended with a zero, because what I can do is look at the calendar and go, okay, yeah, I'll be 56. But I did not, so I was 15 years old, so I was pretty young. I did not get abstinent and recovered at that first meeting. My abstinence date is June 23rd of 2000. By the grace of God, it'll be 26 years in June, one day at a time. And I say by the grace of God, not just, not like people say God bless you, like it's something like an expression. I mean by the grace of God. It is an unmerited gift. It is grace. It's not something I earned or worked hard at and achieved. It is grace. Now I had to be present to win, and I'll talk a little bit more about that when I say, what happened. But so I have been a compulsive overeater from birth. I think maybe some compulsive overeaters are born, some are made. I know, for me, and I, it's not a debate that I wish to engage in, but my earliest memories were of sneaking food, of just having this feeling that I liked food more than other kids, just a lot more than other kids. When, we're at birthday parties and they would, dole out the food. I don't know if we're allowed to mention specific foods, but okay. the birthday cake, and some kids would like eat a little bit and then they go play. I was like, how in the world can they leave this on their plate? So the way that I heard about OA was I had read an article in Ann Landers. For those of you of a certain age, remember Ann Landers and Dear Abby were advice columnists. I think they are not still around. They are long dead, but I think their daughters or hired people are, still running those columns. And both of them talked about 12-step programs, and both of them talked about OA. And in Ann Landers, I remember reading, if you do with food what the alcoholic does with alcohol, or you use food the way the drug addict uses drugs, then this might be a program for you. And I knew even at the tender age of 15, oh, that's me. That's me before I walked in the rooms. And my first meeting, I was by far the youngest person. But I knew after hearing people talk about it that this is where I belong. And they also, because I do want to talk about the big book, and I love that this meeting is focused on, recovery through the big book. There's a lot of great OA literature. But for me, I need like the source material. They talk about when you're going through graduate program, whatever, go into the source material. What is the source? I need like the original. I need the OG stuff. I have a particularly, I believe, severe virulent strain of this disease. I need like the undiluted medicine, and that's what I find in the big book. But when I came into that first meeting in 1985, I hated the big book. I bought one and I started reading it, and I was like, I do not get what you guys are seeing in this. I don't relate to any of this. These are, stockbrokers and veterans and whatever, and they're riding around, they're talking about golf and naming people that I've never heard of, and how does this relate to me? And I am lucky, I'm blessed enough that since then I have had people who sat down with me and had the patience with me to say, okay, here is where it shows you how to do a 4-step. Here is where it shows you how to do a 10-step. No, it's not divided up in nice, neat chapters, or like step chapters, the way a lot of our literature is. But so, it takes a little digging, but it is, to me, it is gold. It is worth it. And so if you kind of have the same feeling, I mean, obviously you're here, so you're open to the idea of recovery through the big book. But if you're, just like, I can't relate to it, and some of the language is weird and antiquated, please call me, call, any of the people who have their numbers, listed, and talk about it, because maybe there's something there, because there were certain stuff, there was stuff that I missed. Anyway. So backing up, what it was like, I am a low bottom compulsive overeater. Not everybody has that same experience. We have higher bottoms. And when I say low bottom, I say when I am in the food, that is my full-time job. I don't answer my phone. I don't, go out. I close the blinds. I gather my food around me, and I cannot get it in me fast enough. I eat like an animal. And so I was, oh, and just to give you some physical stats, I'm 4'11". I used to be able to fudge on 5 feet, but now I'm a solid 4'11". And I'm down about 45 pounds from my top weight, which on a 4'11" frame is not inconsequential. However, the only reason why I'm not, my top weight wasn't 145 pounds more or 245, is I did dabble in bulimia and throwing up, but I hated throwing up. I think there's different types of bulimics. There's bulimics who become addicted to the throwing up part. I hated it. And so I would go months and years without throwing up. But what it enabled me to do when I was doing it is repeat the binge cycle over and over and over again until I would just pass out and I would just be too tired to throw up. So I was able to sort of hold it together through school, graduated, second in my class, a pretty large class in high school. And I say that not to, not to brag, but to tell you that if intelligence could solve this, the people that I meet in these meetings are some of the brightest, most creative people. I have no studies that prove that addicts are smarter or more creative than your average bear, but I think it's true because I meet some really, really smart people in these meetings. If we could think our way out of this disease, we would. But so I was able to sort of hold it together in high school and then went off to college and the wheels just came off. I had a car and I was just binging nonstop and I binged my way out of school. Did well in high school, but then, would withdraw, drop out, get readmitted, under special dispensation for a note from my psychiatrist and my doctor, and then I would end up dropping out again or failing at whatever. And I mentioned that because one of the gifts of this program is I was able to go back at 30 years old, finish my undergraduate, go to graduate school, and now I have a job that I actually really enjoy. But so at my bottom, I had dropped out of school for at that time the last time, and I was living in an apartment in Houston, Texas. I grew up in near Dallas-Fort Worth. Went to school in Houston, but I of course had left school, and I was working as a waitress, which is honest work. But from the outside, it looked okay, but. And this is before the days of reality TV. My apartment was something that you would see on reality TV now. I had stopped, I was binging at such a pace that I had stopped cleaning up after myself. So there were food wrappers and dirty dishes and food jars and everything all over the apartment. I would not let anybody in the apartment. I had broken up with my boyfriend because, I couldn't have him stay over. I just could. It was disgusting. I had a cat box. Oh, my poor cat Gus. It was just disgusting. And I was suicidal. I wanted to kill myself and not like, oh, I think I'll take a couple of pills. No, I wanted to buy a gun. And so I was looking in the Yellow Pages for a gun store. Again, kind of an antiquated reference. For those of you who are under 30, the Yellow Pages was a book where you would look up phone numbers for businesses. And I wanted to kill myself, but here was my problem. I did not want people to find my body in this trash heap of an apartment. That would be too humiliating. But I was in a catch-22 because so I needed to get my apartment cleaned up, clean enough, so that when people found me, it just wouldn't be horrifying to, I don't know, my dead brain. I don't know. But if I could get my act together long enough to clean up my apartment so that it was a suitable environment for people to find my body, then I would have no reason to kill myself. So this sort of this trap door that I had always had, it was like my prudent reserve plan of if things get bad enough, I will just kill myself. I realized that slammed shut. I was going to, as it says in the big book, go on to the bitter end. And that was kind of my bottom. So I reached out to a friend of mine who happened to live in California, and she didn't know how bad it was. She knew that, that I was a compulsive overeater. She didn't know how bad it was. And I told her about the apartment and made a deal with her that she would come out and help me clean the apartment, clean enough so that we could get a maid there if I would. And she wasn't in program, but she knew about 12 steps. If I would come and stay with her and basically make recovery my full-time job. And go to a meeting every day. I was fortunate enough that I was able to quit my job and live on some of my savings. I know not everybody can do that. That was a blessing. I had some money saved up for a rainy day. I didn't want to use it, but this was about as rainy as I could imagine it getting. And so that's what I did. And I stayed with her. I went to a meeting every single day. I ended up, it's kind of a long story, but I ended up moving to California. And so it appears, if for those of you who've been around for a while may have heard the term did a geographic. And a geographic is usually a negative thing. It's like me, if I move, then I'll outrun my disease. If I move, that'll be the solution. Well, I kind of did a geographic, but I wasn't running away from my problem. I was running towards recovery, I feel like. And that's what I did. And that's kind of what I did. But what really happened is that I started working the 12 steps. I had tried to work the 12 steps before. I had worked them, but not all 12. And I would do a 1-2-3. I would do a 1-2-3-4, but I had never got through all 12. And honestly, I started working them with the OA literature, but when I, had my spiritual experience, I was working with somebody who was taking me through using the big book, as well as some other literature, but using the big, who was able to, show me, well, like I said, this is how you do, a four step. This is how you do, this is, okay, the fourth column doesn't appear on the piece of paper, but this is what the fourth column is. And one day at a time, I didn't know why. I didn't know what the relationship really was between, doing this step work and the food, because only the first step mentions food. But one day at a time, I was not picking up. So people a lot of times ask, like in that 15 years, and by the way, I say it took me 15 years. I never left the program. And in those 15 years, I had, I think I had like a couple of 30-day chips, maybe some 60-day chips, but by and large, I could not string together 2 days of abstinence. And so people say, well, what was the difference? If it wasn't, moving, whatever, what was the difference that, if you had tried to work the steps before? And I wish I could say, oh, it was this, I would bottle it and I would sell it. But I will say it was working the steps. It was willing to go to any length. It was, I thought I had surrendered before. To me, surrender feels like I don't care. Like, I don't care what it looks like. I don't care what people at my job that I'm going to quit. I don't care what they think of me. I don't care. I don't even care if I never lose a pound. I just wanted the crazy to stop. I hoped that I would lose weight, and I did, and I reached a healthy body weight. But more important to me was, I had, before I had the desire for me to lose weight, for my life not to be so crazy, I actually desired to stop eating compulsively. And also, I for a long time treated, before getting recovered and abstinent, treated this like a self-help program. And I saw people doing service around me, and those were those type of people. I was this type of person who is really sick, who I need to see what I can get out of this meeting. And they would ask, people to do, and of course, there were service commitments that I didn't qualify for because I, had 3 minutes of abstinence when I walked in the meeting. But it became clear to me that this is not a self-help program. This is an other help program. And when I finally got recovered and abstinent, my sponsors, drilled it into me that yes, you will sponsor, you will do service. I never committed to putting away chairs or doing any of that stuff because, like, what if I didn't show up? Well, I had the cart before the horse. Maybe if I had made a commitment, okay, I'll put away chairs next week. Maybe I would have showed up at the meeting. Who knows? But so anyway, I do, there are quotes in the big, but anyway, so that's what happened. What really happened, it says in the big book, And I haven't talked a lot about the actual food. By the way, I went through some hellacious withdrawal. I am not, there's some people for whom the compulsion to eat is just like yanked out of them and they're free. When I first got abstinent, it was hellacious. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the movie Trainspotting, like the first one, where they're heroin addicts. I remember walking out of that movie complete, and I was with a friend who didn't know what I was or anything. I'm thinking, that is me. That's me. Like, these people are like picking heroin bags out of disgusting toilets. And I thought, that's me. I would do that. I could totally relate to that. And it portrays, the withdrawal and everything. I went through, there are substances that in the doctor's opinion, it talks about the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And I was, one of the things that did happen is I was always reluctant to give up specific substances because I binged on everything. I mean, honestly, I did. I remember binging on, Brussels sprouts that weren't even all the way cooked and thawed. But the thing was that there were certain things I only binged on that while I was waiting for the pizza guy to show up. Or, because I was like saying, okay, I'm not going to go to the grocery store. I'm not going to go to the grocery store. This is here. And then I would eventually go to the grocery store. So there are certain foods that, yes, I have an abnormal reaction to. And I also believe that I have an abnormal reaction to quantities. Some people eat, normal people eat a certain amount and it triggers the phenomenon of I'm full, I'm full. I don't want any more. With me, I eat past a certain amount and it's like, oh, I gotta eat more. I gotta eat more. And so I finally, became willing to give up certain foods. And they said, list your binge foods. And I would say, everything. And it was like, okay, well, I was able to list the things that I would start with. Like, these are the things that I just definitely, once started, I cannot stop. And it talks about, in the doctor's opinion, that the only thing on page XXX, it says the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. I am very much an all or nothing person. And a lot of times we hear in these rooms, that all or black and white thinking is not good. And it's not in a lot of situations. But, for this, it makes it clear. I won't talk a lot about my food plan. If you want to talk to me about food, I'm happy to, give me a call. But I do weigh and measure, and it makes it just like alcohol is for the alcoholic. If I committed it, if it's on the paper, it's abstinent for me that day. If I have to, make a change for some reason, if I drop an egg on the floor, I'm not going to scoop it up and scramble it. But by and large, it's like, okay, then I don't have to think about anything else. And talking about middle of the road solution, I mean, black and white thinking. On page 25, this is another thing. When I talk about surrender, that surrender is like, I don't care. I'm all in. What do you got? I'll do whatever. You want me to, pat my head, rub my stomach, and, sing the national anthem, then I will. So it says at the bottom of that page, it says, if you are as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there is no middle of the road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible, and we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid. We had but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. The other, to accept spiritual health. And this we did because we honestly wanted to and were willing to make the effort. And I like that that paragraph ends with the word effort. This is, as I mentioned before, this is grace. But I gotta, pardon using this pun, I gotta burn some calories to I gotta make an effort, as they say, I gotta, get up, do my writing every day. I write a daily 10 step, which, handwritten, my handwriting's horrible. I would much rather type it and much rather do it with that app. But for me, it's miraculous what, the results of doing stuff like that. I gotta make phone calls. Sometimes I don't feel like it. I gotta take phone calls. I've said a couple of times in this, please call me. I really do want phone calls, but I would be lying if I said every time, the phone rang or I saw a number, I was like, yippee. But I gotta do those things. I've got to. And why not? That's so I can be in a position to receive grace. I always thought the purpose of the big book was to get me abstinent, to get the alcoholic sober. Turns out the purpose of the big book, it says, let's see. It's in Weagnostics. Okay. It says, I'll find it. And if not, then I'll paraphrase it badly and somebody can correct me. Oh, here we go. Page 45. It's like the thesis of the book. It's like the nut graph. Well, that is exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So that's the thing. It's like the big book and the 12 steps don't get me abstinent. God gets me abstinent. And by the way, I use the word God for my higher power just because I'm bad with names. It's easy to remember. It's short, but you can use whatever term you want. I just, for me, that was a big thing was to, I got abstinent in kind of a very, hip, cool sort of city. And it wasn't very hip for people to talk about God or to use the he pronoun with God. And I realized, you know what, for me, that's actually more comfortable. I think people who grew up in some churches that they found restrictive may find it less comfortable. But for me, I was like, well, that actually feels really comfortable for me. And when I let go of what people thought of me, that they were going to think I was uncool because I called my higher power God and happened to refer to God as he, when I let go of trying to be so cool and hip, actually that was a big step for me in developing relationship with this higher power. But anyway, so that's what the whole purpose is. It says it right there, is to enable me to find a relationship, to develop a relationship with this power that can solve not only my food problem, but all my problems. Because I'll tell you, once the food was lifted, there was a lot of stuff under there that I didn't realize.
5 minutes
This
left,
book,
Rachel.
oh,
Yeah,
thank you.
yeah, yeah.
This book, taught me how to, what to do with fear. Gosh, I was, if you had asked me when I was in the food what I was afraid of, I would have said, well, first of all, never getting abstinent. But, I don't know, sharks, spiders, I had no idea. And when the food was lifted, I became aware, oh my gosh, I have all these fears. I have fear of what you think of me. I'm afraid of losing something I've got. I'm afraid of not getting something I want. And the big book shows me what to do with those fears. It shows me what to do with resentments. It walks me through what to do with resentment. And I want to talk about also, as I said, the whole idea of helping others, of carrying the message. I love that, our parent program AA marks its birthday, not with when Bill W., who was the founder of AA, not when he got sober, but when Dr. Bob, who was the man to whom Bill W. carried the message, or one of the men, one of the many men. But when Dr. Bob, when AA number two, Dr. Bob got sober, because that to me drives home the whole, idea of we do not do this alone. We do not do this alone. I try, I have a bunch of, or had a bunch of copies of OA and AA literature that had food stains on them when I would occasionally, stay away from meetings and try to get abstinent on my own. And yeah, I mean, the pages would stick together because I would like binge and read literature. So, yeah, and speaking of Dr. Bob,
On the
I,
table.
so, I, have a fondness for Dr. Bob, and he talks about, you know, why he does service. Let me, Dr. Bob, where is he? So it talks about he talks about why he does service. He says, here we go. He talks about the reasons. He says, goodness. Okay, four reasons. A sense of duty. It is a pleasure because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. Oh my gosh, so many people have taken time that I can never repay that debt. But I can try by passing it on. And because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. You know, that to me, that's the, you know, I'm buying what you're selling with that point because I do not want to go back to where I was. So I'll close with this because this is one of my favorite paragraphs in the big book. Because you know, probably some of you are right now suffering, or you know, have recently suffered, or you know, it's or all of this sounds like I can never do that. So I will tell you this, you know, don't listen to me, listen to somebody who helped like thousands and thousands of alcoholics in this time. If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any form, other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking, compulsive overeating for good and all, and sincerely feel you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half of the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you were getting another drink, your heavenly Father will never let you down. So thank you so much for letting me share, for asking me to share. I'm going to close with that because I want to hear what you guys have to say, and I will pass.
Thank you so much, Rachel K. Thank you so much.